June 26, 2021. It's the Watt Pedro Show. Swap for Pedro show. Happy Sorry. Started the show off with Off Minor, Take Five. He's John Coltrane with Thelonious Monk. And then we had The Molecules with Fruitvale, which is, I think, a town up in NorCal. And Brother Matt's still at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, although we're emerging, and soon I'll be with him. But I am not totally man alone because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Brother Ron Anderson all the way from Brooklyn. Welcome aboard, Ron.
How you doing?
Very, very honored. We got to thank right away Brother Al Margolis for making the connect. Truly grateful. They're in I think he's in Chester.
Yeah, he's upstate now, and he used to live not far from where I am now. I mean, you know, I met him way back in the day in the mid-80s.
Well, we're going to get to that, but I want to go even further back, Ron. Right, I want you to bring your fucking earliest musical memory, please.
Okay. I put a little thought into this before, but I can, I'll sort of, well, my earliest memories, we had, my brother's 11 years older than me. So we had a piano in our house, like a, you know, spin it, little upright. And I remember banging away on that thing. It's like, probably my first music memory is that. The second.
That's a good one.
It's a good one, right?
Yeah.
The second one is my brother, because he's 11 years older. So let's say when I'm 4, right? He's 15. So it's probably around 1964, 65. I remember music pre-Beatles.
He could have fathered you. He could have fathered you.
And what he was into, what I remember listening to him, maybe my first records that I remember him playing was either, it's one of two. It was either Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs.
Oh, yeah. Uno, dos, right? Tres, cuatro.
Yep. Or.
Don't be L7.
Yeah, or it was, oh, gee, now I'm forgetting the other one. Chubby Checker, Do the Twist.
Oh, yeah, great tune. You know, Sam used to tour in a hearse. It's in Tab Falco's book on Memphis, but he gets into Louisiana and Sam the Sham and. And yeah, torn in a hearse is quite an
idea.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know about their outfits too and all that, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to think, well, I guess when I was a kid, I saw the album cover. I thought they were really like, you know, foreigners from the Middle East or something. I don't know. I was a little kid.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I got fooled by all kinds of shit. Let me ask you, where was this pad?
Well, this was in West New York, New Jersey.
Okay.
Which is right across the river from Manhattan on the Jersey side.
Sure.
And, I was born in Jersey City.
I think it's highway number 9. I've driven up the west side of the Hudson, and I think I've passed through there.
It's not far from where Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr had their famous duel. That was in Weehawken. That's one town over there.
That's right. And there's something called the Palisades.
The Palisades, right on.
Well, let me ask you.
Yeah.
The first record you bought with your own money.
Well, that's another good question. The first records I bought with my own money were actually 8 tracks. Are we going to count those?
I'm not. Okay. It's just music that's on a medium, okay?
Okay. The first records I bought with my own money was probably either the Grand Funk Railroad, that Coin album.
You know, one E Pluribus Funk.
Yeah, that's it. Or Chicago at Carnegie Hall.
Oh, yeah. They weren't CTA anymore. I remember.
Yeah, and I was a big what's the name of the guitar player now? Terry Taft.
Yeah. Oh, very, man, very sad about him. Very sad.
It is sad, and he was a monster. Great. I mean, really outside too, right? He would get loose.
Good singer, good pipes. Yeah, that was very sad. I think it was an accident, right?
It was an accident. He was fooling around and maybe partying, and he didn't know the gun. He thought the gun was empty.
Yeah.
Classic mistake.
Right. So what about the first gig you saw, Ron?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another one I'm slightly foggy on. It's between one or two. It was either, and both of them are at the same place. They were both at Bergen Community, no, a community college in Rockland Community College. It was either, well, the first two is one, I don't know which one was first. One was Hot Tuna.
Yarma.
So this is 1973.
Jack Cassidy, Monster Bass Man. Bless his pointy little head. Oh, man. And then at Baxter's, I mean, there's some fucking bass going. And also on Jimmy record, he does.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And then it was, check this out, Jeff Beck with Jan Hammer.
I saw Jan Hammer with Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Oh, well, monstrous band. I never saw Mahavishnu.
Billy Cobham and Rick Laird on the bass and Jerry Goodman on the violin. And he was sitting on an anvil case. It was a curtained off part of the Long Beach Arena, and it's probably the only fuge I liked. Can I ask you this about, grade school? And
sure.
Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No. You know, I wasn't in any of those.
Well, I just asked because some schools get rid of
I wasn't in any of these music programs until, I wasn't in any of those. I was always pretty much, I had music lessons on piano.
How was that experience?
Yeah, but here's the interesting thing about this. I had bad teachers.
Yeah, so it was terrible experience, right?
I studied for about a year, and my method, the first time it was actually in a shopping mall, like in Bambergers on Route 17. They had organs. And they teach you to play on these like Fender Rhodes or something, I remember. And then I was good because I could just memorize stuff right away. Okay. So I wouldn't read anything. I just memorize it. And, they would put me out with this teacher and who would press people to buy organs. And they'd have me, like, count the melody of, like...
Right, Dog and Pony Show.
Dr.
You know who was good at that? You know who was good at that memory shit? Was Glenn Campbell. He couldn't read, and he was an incredible session man.
Oh, my God. I saw... There's a video of Glenn Campbell playing really outside stuff, right? Because he's talking about what someone else is doing, and he's just playing, out, like, free, like... These weird diminished scales and just like this atonal. I couldn't believe it. Glenn Campbell was an awesome guitar player. Yeah,
he really was. But it just shows to go to you, you don't have to go the formal, the same old route. Everybody's got a different path in music to get to here.
Yeah, I'm really, I like to work with bands, probably like how you like to work with bands. I like everyone in the room. I show them the parts. Here's part A, part B, part C. Play it. And we work it out live in the room, and that's my favorite thing to do. I love the vibe of working with other musicians.
Yeah, well, that's very generous. I'm into that too. Well, you'll be in a bass man. We look good making you guys look good. So, I'm always thinking about being a launch pad, being a springboard, being the grout between the tile or something. you know what I mean? I want to aid and abet. Let me get back to your formative stage, though.
Yeah.
Not after school, like graduating, but in the afternoon. Did you do the basement band, the garage band, bedroom band?
Yeah, heavy. That's my life-changing experience. Well, what happened was, after this piano thing, I probably didn't do anything. But I started, around seventh grade or so, I'm about 11, 12 years old, I start really getting into listening to music, and my own, and I'm getting into these guitar players and whatnot. And in high school, I had a friend who played guitar and he was playing in bands. And I found out that his bass player had quit his band, right? I mean, this is just kids jamming in a basement,
Sure.
But his bass player had quit. We're kids. We're 13, and I found out that his bass player had quit, and I guess I bugged my old man to, drag me down to this music shop and get me a cheesy little amp and a bass, right?
Bass! Whoa,
and,
okay.
Yeah, I started on bass, so...
Okay, what you gotta tell me? What kind of bass?
Yeah, well, here's the funny thing. It was a Japanese bass called a Leonardo. And it was modeled after a Fender jazz bass.
You know what? I played one from the 70s, not called That's Leonardo, fun. But the same kind of idea. And it, the yeah. guy in the Go team had it, Jamie, and it was great. Some of those yeah. knockoffs weren't that bad.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I was really shocked the first time I actually played a real Fender bass. I was like, whoa. But it was cool, you know,
I recorded the whole Cuz album with one. You know, a lot of it depends on how they're set up, too, you know. Even sure. a great bass, if it ain't set up right, it's going to be absolutely. Lame, yeah. So tell me, so you joined it. Now, do these guys have a name?
Not yet, but we soon came up with, well, what I did, so I practiced for a week.
And 1 week.
1 week. And I went up to him and said, hey, man, I can play bass. And next thing I know, I'm jamming with my friend Ken, and the drummer at that time was Tony. And we're down in his mom's basement, and, you know, we're playing, like, here I have a song, which is basically three notes played over and over to ad nausea. Yeah, then later we started playing things like Black Sabbath, Mountain, Deep Purple.
Felix Pappalardi.
Felix Pappalardi, Mount was Leslie West just died.
Oh, yeah, I know. I got to see him a couple times. I saw Wes yeah. Bruce and Lang.
Oh, great.
Mr. Pappalardi, he had been shot by his wife by that time. But
I know, another tragic story.
But Corky
huh?
Lang was Mountain. And, of yeah. course, Leslie West was an incredible cat. I think he ended up in Germany and stuff. And I saw him and lost a leg in diabetes. But, man, he yeah. could play. And he had his own style. I had a lot of respect for him. So
totally,
did this totally. Band... Did this band ever do a gig, or was it just a practice band?
We did a couple gigs. But what happened with this band was we did some gigs, but like nothing, you know. We basically jammed. And then our drummer changed. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't very long for me going from like trying to learn people's songs and writing our own stuff to just free improvisation in 1976, and I was totally at some point, like I was getting hip to like people like Frank Zappa, you know.
You said 1976.
Yeah,
76. That's a year. That's a year us Minutemen graduated high school, San Pedro High.
Oh, see, you're just a little bit. I graduated 77.
So I'm less younger. Look, I want to play Male Ego by the Molecules.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show, that chunk of music. Male Ego started it off from the Molecules, then guitar and piano duo for No One from Al Margolis, our buddy. P. Kane, a Buffalo Cap, but he's in D.C. now, and his solo record is great. I recommend everybody. This is called Technopoly. Yeah. And then Parallel System, System 2, from the Rambutan Proj, Eric Hardiman. He's going to be on the show tomorrow, but he put this thing together with all these, you know, people trading files and making different combinations. This had Frazier Burnett, A.F. Jones, Michael Kiefer, and, of course, Eric Hardiman. Then brand new from Helvetia, New Mess, Bombas Prendon, Space Door Jar. And finally, The Molecules with He's a Banker. So this improvisation thing, you said about England. You mean like the AAM or something?
Yeah, yeah, Anne and Derek Bailey, and I didn't find out about those cats till, you know, maybe 5-6 later, like when I was in college and just post-college. So this, we were just kind of following. To me, you know, I guess the improv we were copying was people like Cream, and then people like the psychedelic stuff you heard in San Francisco, right?
Right.
And then, you know, like Hendrix had moments, you know, those Almond Butter jams, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And, you know, then at some point, all the floodgates open up because you find someone like Frank Zappa, and then next thing you know, you're listening to ragas with Ravi Shankar, you know, and your whole brain, right, explodes.
Well, what about John Coltrane?
Well, Coltrane, sure, but I started listening to jazz, more when I was in college and getting hip on that stuff, like just post-college, you know? Because then I met a lot of cats when after college I moved to Philadelphia. And that's kind of where I started, that 1980. That's where I started to be, quote, a professional.
So you didn't go to college for music?
Well, no, I went to college. I went to this place. Wait, first of all, I'll just give you a slight background. I went to this very strict Catholic school called Don Bosco, which is in North New Jersey. And it was like a college preparatory high school, completely academic, right? So all this music thing was a complete rebellion. And, you know, in my family, you know, people are like really into sports, and I'm not knocking sports or anything. I'm a Mets fan, but you know, no one was into art or music or, like, I was a freak, man. So, you know, it wasn't until I met like-minded people, except the guys in my band, until I went to this place, Goddard College. And there I studied, like, photography, video documentary.
Goddard? Was it named after the Rocket Man?
No, it's based on... It's not named after him, but it's based on it's more like open, free education. So there's no grading systems. You basically design your own programs. And I basically did there and played in bands. And I went through 2 years. And after my fourth semester, I just decided through other people I was playing music with, you know, I want to play music. So I just dropped out. I end up in Philadelphia. And that's when things – I met this guy, Victor Paulzentet, in Philadelphia. And we formed a band called Rad At Rad R.
Oh, shit. Minutemen played with Rad At Rad R.
I think you did because –
No, I know we did it. Maxwell.
Yeah. Yeah, but
I was kind of like Sonic Youth. There was a woman bass player.
Yeah.
And in fact, get this. I was in the 13th. Yeah. Glenn Branca's 13th Symphony, Hallucination City, and the guy conducting the piece was John Meyer.
John Myers. I know. John's a good pal.
I watched him every fucking beat, every bar of that tune. I sat right next to Virgil Moorhead, only one drummer, 20 bass players, 64 guitar players at the Disney Music whatever shit downtown. Isn't it a small fucking world?
Small world. But here's the thing about... Here's the thing about Rad At Rad R. We were together a year. It was a different band. The band broke up. Victor and Sonda were a couple. They moved to New York. And I moved to New York about a year later, Lower East Side, 1982. that's when they reformed Rat at Radar with John Myers. And I was not in that version of the band.
Okay, okay. That's why I didn't see you then.
Yeah, but they're all pals of mine. But here's the funny tie-in, right?
Yes.
So Sonda, I remember the bass player in Rat at Radar comes up to me one day and she goes, Ron, there's a band. The next time you come to New York, you got to see this band. It's the Minute. They're called the Minutemen, and you are gonna love them. So every time you guys came to New York, for one reason or another, I was out of town or I missed you. Right? I missed you guys like three or four times. And
you know, the tours in those days, the big gig was New York City. The goal of the tour basically was go to New York City, play the big gig, and then turn around. And then
right.
Everything else was a stop in between to do that big gig.
Whoa. Touring in the States is a grind, man.
Yeah, but in other ways, it's an education, too.
Well, yeah, it teaches you. You know, sometimes I have European musicians come over, and I've toured with
a
them.
A lot different.
Boy, did they get the shock of their lives.
No, there's one part that's kind of... There's one part that's kind of like us. It's England.
Oh, yeah.
Right, well, right? Because you're playing pubs and stuff, so that's kind of like a U.S. thing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I think of Europe, I actually don't think of England. I think of that separately.
You know, there was, in those days especially, there was a Cold War thing, and so we were given a lot of cultural support. Like a Europe tour in the early 80s was half of this country called West Germany, and it was these youth centers you play at 7:30. Okay, so you quit Rat at Radar, but...
I didn't quit.
The band falls apart, I'm sorry.
The band falls apart.
Yeah.
What did I do next? Okay, so I moved to New York City. Well, going back to Philadelphia, did you interview a guy named Jack Wright, saxophone player?
Of course. He sent me the fucking the free music book I read and fucking really embraced.
Well, dig, man. This, right after the breakup of Rat at Radar, I was still in Philadelphia for a year. So I did like some solo gigs and I met all these free jazz cats. And that's how I really got hip to really what was going on. And one of the people who was very influential to me was Jack Wright.
Wow. Wow. You know, it's funny. You said, when I mentioned John Coltrane, you said jazz. By the, you know, the last part of his life, there was people like Downbeat and shit calling his shit anti-jazz.
Well, yeah, to me, that was the shit I dug.
Yeah,
right?
Me too. Well, I like it all. To me, it's like a whole story, but I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, all of it. So yeah, you know, I'm a huge, like, you know, in the mid 90s, I went through this like Mingus stage. I bought every damn Mingus thing, like during the Molecules. I wasn't listening to rock music during the Molecules at all. I was listening to Charles Mingus. Almost like, that was like, for a couple of years, that was my bag.
But that's happening.
You
know what I mean?
Great. Sure.
Because you're building up vocabulary in your fucking brain, so when it's your turn to take the lead.
Yeah, it's all connected, man.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. Really, you know, it's amazing, right?
Absolute. Ron, we're at the end of the first hour, June 26, 2021. Just about Peter, so special guest, Ron Anderson. Hold tight for hour two. June 26, 2021, it's second hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
make a damage, bounce a tennis ball off that stainless steel all day long. It won't leave a mark. It won't make a dent. But maybe over time, inevitably,
damage.
Am I a repulsor?
Damage.
And are you repulsed by me?
Thank you.
Pedro, so start out the second hour with the Molecules doing Mountain Trash. Then Ben Salter from Tasmania with Damage next door or close by. And Sydney Lucas and Bella with Scene. And then Three Paying Customers at the Garrick Theater Ron Anderson. Now, say Molecules is your own name, and it sounds like a tour diary entry.
Well, you know what, the three paying customers? That's my homage to Frank Zappa.
Okay.
Because I'll fill you in. I mean, the Garrick Theater was a theater here in New York. So when Zappa played here, he moved to New York, I think, 66, 67. And they had a residency. And at first it was packed, but as the weeks went on, less and less people come, right? And they had one night where they only had three paying customers. And what they did, the band went out, they bought all this takeout food, and the band basically served dinner to these three people in the audience, and that was the show.
Okay.
Cool, right?
Yeah, back to... he's strange, guy. I mean, you know, most I know about him is reading the Mike Barnes book of Captain Beefheart. So what happens with you? You end up on the West Coast.
Yeah, well, let me just kind of cap up the 80s. So in the 80s, I'm in the 80s. I finally end up with everything's a long story, man, you know? But I end up getting some recording equipment, an eight track recording tape, a half inch reel to reel. I set up my own little demo studio in Brooklyn, New York. I got a place where I can play 24 hours a day. Right? Musician's dream. Full volume.
You're talking eight track, half inch, reel to reel?
Yeah.
Who made it? Was it Otari?
No, it wasn't the Otari.
Because
it was,
that Double Nickels on the Dime was recorded on an Otari eight track.
That Otari is the more pro one. Mine was done on a
No, Bob, just saying a coincidence, you know.
Yeah. Sure. You could get great stuff on eight track. That was like, all those Molecule records, all the stuff you've been playing, are recorded on that same machine.
So what do? You start fucking going to work on it, right?
Yeah, I'm making some money. I'm on the side. I'm recording rap bands and R&B bands, and then I'm playing what happens is I was married at the time. I break up with my wife, and I kind of go crazy for a year, and basically I just decide, well, rather than be depressed, I'm just going to play music like 24/7.
Yeah.
So I'm having people come over my place. We're jamming. You know who comes over my place at one time? Who I met was Tony Mamone.
Big hero.
You know Tony? So I met Tony one night.
Well, yeah. We saw the Modern Dance Tour. It changed the Minutemen. Me, D. Boone, and Georgie saw him in West Hollywood at the Whiskey. And I got to record, you know, he's got Studio G now in Brooklyn near you.
I know. I've never been there, but Tony came over. We had like a bond. He was breaking up with his wife at the time. So I said, hey, man, come on over and we'll jam. I had a drummer who lives right next door in the other apartment. Like 2 o'clock in the morning, I knock on his door. Hey, man, come on over and jam. Tony Mamone is here, man. And we just let it, cut some beers, and we just let it rip.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Kind of stuff, you know?
I recorded my third opera with him. I got to use his 66 Fender jazz bass, the MGs, in a badass bridge.
Now you're talking. That's shit.
I just love Tony Mamone. I mean,
he's a sweet. I haven't seen him in many, many years, but he was totally sweet guy.
You know who his bass hero is, he told me?
No.
Family Man Barrett.
Oh, yeah. Nice. So what else can I say? Well, then, and also in the mid-80s, I got involved in, like, the electronic experimental noise scene here in Brooklyn. And one of the key players of that was Al Margolis.
Yes.
So it's a big, you know, it's a big history. We had a whole scene going on here. You know, we had a place where, you know, we organized mainly Al organized a place called, I think it was called Bar None. It was in this strange bar in the neighborhood I'm living now called Lauderbachs. And, you know, it all ties in. So
not just that, he got the cassette fucking thing going too, right? Where people were like a community.
Right. So basically, the stuff I gave you to listen to was only from the 90s, but I released an album in the 80s. And I released some cassette stuff. I was in that whole cassette network. Not as heavy as Al was, but I released a thing on his label called Happy New Year in, I don't know what year it was, 80, let's say 86, 87.
You know, you sent me the stuff called Ron Ruins. And I want to play. Marionette D. Stravinsky. I want to play that right now.
Do it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Ron Ruins. This is a collab Ron's got with the Ruins man. Help me, Ron. His name.
Tatsuya Yoshita.
Yeah, incredible drummer man.
Oh, my God. And composer. And singer.
And singer, yeah, of course. A lot of times he collabs with the sax, right?
He's got things, sax Ruins, yep.
Yeah. Marionette D. Stravinsky. Okay. Stravinsky's puppet, people. And then we have something brand new from Roscoe Mitchell. Huh? Chicago Art Ensemble. Sandy Ewan, Damon Smith, and Weasel Walter. It's part one of A Railroad Spike Forms the Voice. And then Rick Weaver with his version of Kashmir. Yeah, it's a trip. All, you know, very good. Another project of yours. In fact, the rest of the music is that you gave me is this Pack.
Pack is my band.
Bienvenue, La Hotel Plastique. Huh? Welcome to the Hotel Plastique.
Yes. Plastic, yeah.
What's Pack, Ron?
Well, Pack was the band that I formed when I moved back to New York City, post Molecules. And I kind of moved back, you know, because I'm from here. My father was getting old. You know, my family's in Jersey, and I end up back in New York. I'm back in Brooklyn. And so I formed a band straight away here, called it Pack, thinking I just like, well, I have a solo, my solo album is called Pack Small R Half Inch. And that word Pack, that title comes from a postcard that Alan Bishop sent me of the Sun City Girls. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, of course, Arizona. Trio, power trio.
Yeah, yeah. So
we lost one of them, right? There are only two guys.
No. They live in Seattle now.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the original guys is gone now, right?
Yeah, Charlie. Charlie, the drummer. He died a couple years ago. Yeah. Sad. He was a really great guy.
I did some gigs with them
at the Molecules. So they sent me this postcard. On this postcard, this weird thing was written, Pack and half and a small little R and half inch.
And we also got to tell the listeners, because they can't see this, but there's no C, people. It's just P-A-K.
P-A-K, right. So basically, I took that name thinking no one would ever use this as a band name, which, do you know there's a band called, and use it as my band's Pack, right? But of course, you know, there's a band now, a composer, musician, rap artist called Anderson .Paak.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I can't win. Luckily, right, do I have my band Pack. Sometimes I call it Ron Anderson's Pack.
Yeah, well, you named one of the we're going to start the third hour out with the tune that you called that. In fact, we're at the end of the second hour now, June 26, 2021, edition of Wapito Show. Special guest Ron Anderson. Hold tight for hour three.
Okay.
June 26, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. We start off the third hour with Ron Anderson's pack, people. Secret Curve, out on Zadok, John Zorn's label. Two Different Ways by Port Sunshine. After that, PBK. Only one letter different and only one letter away, people. Imminent Lies, Rotten Thoughts. Yeah, there's a method to how I put these tunes in order in the last 20 years, people. Head Boggle, we had them on a few weeks ago. G-00 plus XX-000. Yeah, these titles. And then finally, Pack with the Tack, Tack. Now, Ron, I want to backtrack because I played so much Molecules, but we kind of jumped ahead to Pack. So let's give people a little Reader Digest version of the Molecules, because that was a West Coast band, right?
Right. The first version was myself, Chris Milner, who wrote half the music and did half the singing. And actually, I like a lot of his songs better than mine. But
that's like me with Dee Boone and Georgie.
It's normal, man, right? And Tom Scandora was our drummer. And he's still the drummer of Molecules, if we ever get together. And then we had a Japanese bass player named Rio. And at one point, he was not allowed to return back to the United States. And then we added John Sherba, amazing guitarist, composer, musician, and I asked him to play bass, and he said yes. And that's the present stance of the band if we ever do anything again, which I would like to one day.
So you mean, okay, so you left the bass and went to guitar?
I left, yeah, when in 1980, I ended up, I got myself a guitar, Les Paul. Actually, something called the Paul. It's more like a cross between
I remember them, Natural Paul. Finish.
Yeah, that's it. And I got one of those, and I decided I wanted to play guitar. And I still play bass, and because on Secret Curve, I play bass. But so I play both.
It's not like you gave up bass. You just added to your vocabulary.
I can't play bass. I play bass now like a guitar player plays bass. You dig? You know what I mean? With a pick. And,
yeah, but so there's some good pick with bass. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, even funk stuff. Even Anthony Jackson, For the Love of Money. That's done with a pick.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
Well, that's why you're on the show, so I can enlighten you.
Yeah, sure, man.
No, whatever it takes. It's all vocabulary. I saw John Entwistle slap fingers and pick in the same fucking song.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
So you know what? I'm not a purist about anything to get the sound into the speakers. So,
but that's how I am. That's what I'm about. Yeah, I like sound and music and organizing sound and music and ideas. I think more of a composer than like being an instrumentalist. Okay. You know, my goal was not to be a great guitar player. My goal was to do something that I dug that maybe other people would like and maybe challenge them.
Oh, that makes great sense. You know what I mean? Because you're not living up to a fucking cliche.
Yeah, I wanted to do my own thing, and basically it got me doing a lifetime of part-time jobs.
Parallel universe. I want to play Zoku Metsu. We'll be right back.
Money doesn't end until it spends. So on.
Watford Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Brand New Prides for Ron Anderson. Zoku Metsu with Undulations. Then Matt Nelson, Knoxville bass player. Unholy Ghost Mind. And finally, Pack with Reflection Consumer. So enlighten us to your latest prod, Zoku Metsu.
Yeah. Wow, we went through 40 years of my life so fast. It's like, my head's spinning. But Zoku Metsu is about to, it's actually going to be released next Friday, the Friday coming up, which is July 2nd.
That's right. Well,
you hear that horn?
I heard it. It's righteous ambiance.
Okay, cool. So July 2nd on Bandcamp, just search Ron Anderson, Zoku Metsu.
Now, how'd it come together? And who's in it? It's a collab, right?
Okay. Yeah, it's a collab with someone who actually lived a lifelong Brooklynite, born and raised in the neighborhood I'm in now, like the south side of Prospect Park. And he does electronics, drum machine. You know, he's an experimental electronic musician. He does a lot of, he organizes a lot of shows. He organized a festival here in Brooklyn called the Experimental.
His name.
Oh, gee, Robert L. Pepper.
Yeah, great.
So, we've been working on, we started this just before the pandemic hit, kind of started finishing up during the beginning of the pandemic, and then we started the artwork, the mastering, the editing. And we're going to release this this coming week, and we're really excited about it. Actually, we broke the bank. We put out it's 200 vinyl, limited edition, and we're really really happy with it. And it's it's music that I always do, but it's different than a lot of music that we heard tonight. It's because it's electronic stuff, you know. But I'm playing guitar, and I'm trying to make sounds more than be a great guitarist on it. You know, I'm just trying to make an atmosphere that fits in with the sound of Zoku Metsu.
Yeah, well, maybe part of it too is it's more of a collab and you're less the shot caller.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's equal. You know, we equal it out and we do it together. I mean, he's responsible for a lot of the programming and all the synth work, and he did the mix. But I did the mastering and I did the crossfades between all the tracks. So I did some like post mixing, and we collaborated. He did the artwork, but I helped collaborate with that. It's like I really, you know, at this stage of my life, I think collaboration is so much where it's at. If you work with
absolutely.
Other
absolutely. No, I totally agree with you. I've been doing buttloads.
Well, you know, you played with you know, one of my pals. I saw you had Brandon Seabrook on. He's one of my favorite guitar players, man.
Well, yeah, I did. It was called Three Layer Cake. I just gave them last month music for a second one.
Yeah, with Mike Pride.
What started. Mike Pride starts it, right? He was on the show, and I said, send me some drums. And I played to it because the connect was Jack Wright. And I just finished reading the free music, okay? So I said, you send me those drums, and I'll pretend you're in the room. And I'll just go for it like we were improvising.
Why not, man? It totally worked.
And then I said, you pick a third layer for this cake. And he picked Brandon Seabrook.
Ah, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, Mike's another great guy. He used to actually live in this very neighborhood.
He's in Chester, New York.
By Al Margolis.
That's right.
I mean, you see how this works, man?
Yeah, it's fucking nuts.
It's totally crazy.
Oh, man. So, besides Zoku Metsu, what next do you got planned since collabs is where it's at?
Yeah, I've got a free improv project that's already mixed, mastered, ready to go. The label that we were going to put it out on, we're kind of waiting because there's some, like, personal issues with the label. Not bad vibes, but, you know, they're going through something. It's like a one-man label. And but I have this improv project that I really like. It's with me and a Japanese singer, and her name is Ayako Kanda. And we did this here at my studio, my one-room studio here that I have in Brooklyn, where I'm talking to you from now. And I think it's really a great recording. I'm really happy with it.
Does this project have a name?
I'm sorry?
Does this project have a name?
It doesn't have a name. Right now, it's just me and Ayako Kanda.
Well, that sounds like a good name.
Yeah, it's like a duet, and I think what we're going to do is if this label doesn't put it out, we'll shop it a bit, and then maybe we'll put it out ourselves. It's got to see the light of day.
Yeah, because, I'm a firm believer that. The stuff that gets all into the vault, that's such a shame and stuff. Yeah, you got to release it, people. If you do stuff, put it out there. Let the freak flag fly. Ron, where can people find you on the internet?
Wow. They can find me. I have my own website that I don't use so much anymore, but
you probably got links to other stuff there.
It's ronanderson-molecules.com.
Okay.
I'm on Facebook. You can find me there. I'm still a little bit under 5,000. And then I'm on Instagram and I'm on YouTube.
Okay. I like your site. You probably got links to those other corporate telephone poles where we hang our flyers. we staple up our flyers.
yeah.
I'm really intrigued by this thing you got going with this thing. When you get this thing out, however you do it, will you come back on the show? And maybe we could bring her on too with a conference call through Skype or something and talk about it.
That would be totally awesome, man.
Oh, thank you so much, Ron. It's a big honor to have you aboard. Can't wait till next time. People, it's been the June 26, 2021 edition. WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.